Introduction to Bamidbar. The author of the Midrash says that he uses the topic on living Torah values. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the Jews out of Mitzrayim, right, we're told he considered the route which they should go. He avoided the Philistine route, because that might turn to cause them to turn back, and they took the longer route. And he ended up detaining them, unfortunately, for the 39, 40 years in the desert. The Chafetz Chaim says, amongst HaKadosh Baruch Hu's other considerations, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't let the Jews pass Plishtim, because the Plishtim were idol worshippers, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want the nation to have a view of tremendous numbers of getchkes, images, and avodah zarah images. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, his kavana was to take the newly formed Jewish nation, put them in a protected religious environment in order that they should basically become immune in some fashion to avodah zarah. The Chasam Sofer says the Philistine cult was on a very high level, and the Jews would have easily looked and possibly become influenced. He said in Egypt, it was a primitive avodah zarah method, right? And he said the Egyptians didn't have many cultural attainments. As a matter of fact, one of the Mefarshim points out their greatest accomplishments were pyramids for death. They were a death cult. They didn't see much value in living. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't even want Klal Yisrael to learn some of the other sophistication from the Philistines. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was, I don't know if you can say HaKadosh, was concerned that the same way the advanced Greek culture seemed enticing, along with all its schmutz, the Philistines, who were on that level compared to the Egyptians, would have the same effect. He says, the author, and I guess he's quoting the Chafetz Chaim, that the Jewish people, and we will see, had a chance to go to Eretz Yisrael up to Parsha Shlach when the spies came. And when the results of the spies and the creation of Tisha B'Av occurred, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I guess, it's hard to say HaKadosh Baruch Hu then decided, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that the other plan, the 38 years of intense Torah study in the desert, was required to make the nation able to go to Eretz Yisrael. He said the desert experience was to be a manner in which both as a nation, as an individual, you got a Torah perspective from the moment you woke up to the moment you went to bed. And now the author of the Midrash says, to live a full Torah life, you've got to basically, regularly try to approach what are your values in life. And where do they come from? Are they drawn from your society, or are they drawn from the Torah? He says, we live in an age, right, of great automation, even greater than it was 40 years when he wrote this sefer. We know about AI and robotics, right? And we know that the tremendous ability of especially goods, right, that you can buy is staggering. Think back to our grandparents. How, what was their selection of, for example, clothing, right, in 1940, 1950? How did they differ? How were they able to keep what we used to call, quote, the antiques for so long? The usable dresser or the usable break front remained usable all their lives. It didn't become outdated and needed replacing. He says, this notion of the throwaway society, the replacing society, can develop an attitude that even other things that have antiquity, that come from old, need to be changed, need to be upgraded, need to be in step with the modern world. Our mitzvos, he says, can easily be attacked as being relevant to days gone by, but we can find, if we want, logical reasons why they may not apply. He says, and it's interesting, he says, mass production, he says, is even at the stage where you can buy mezuzahs, he says, made in Japan. I never saw one, but all right. And he quotes a fact that the market has tens of thousands of mezuzah, so-called scrolls, that have no kiddusha and are totally invalid. Rav Meir said, I was a Talmud by Rav Yishmoel, and he asked me, what is your parnasa? What are you doing? And Rav Meir said, I told his Rebbe, I'm a sofer. I write Sifrei Torah, Tefillin, Mezuzahs. And he warned me. He said, my dear son, you've got to be careful. You are working with the Avoda Shamayim. You're doing God's work on earth. If you make an error where you put even an extra vav where it doesn't belong, or you omit a hay or an ayin somewhere, right? You could cause the destruction of the entire world. And Rav Meir says he took tremendous effort to learn the exact spelling of everything and to know even the, you know, like if a letter needed to be rounded a little more based on Kabbalah, needed to be squared, he learned that as well. And he quotes a rabbi who said that, unfortunately, mitzvot can become, what's the word, routine. They can become a matter of habit. And he says there are many people out there who may take the shortcut, right, when they're going to buy tefillin, when they're going to buy a mezuzah, etc. Oh, this guy's hechsher has got to be good enough. He said, on the other hand, when they go to choose the car or the van with his kids, they make sure of the safety features and the belts and this. He says, someone who is a Yorei Shamayim, someone who is God-fearing, has got to take the same level of care in the Tashmishei Mitzvah, in the things we use to do a mitzvah, as we do with the most important material item that we own. And he says this goes for kashrus as well. And he says kashrus is exceedingly difficult, especially in today's day and age, when we could take something that starts off in the milcha category, and chemically we can alter it that it becomes a quasi-meat product. Similarly, we have the technology today to convert certain meat extracts into what would be considered add-ons to dairy products. And he talks about the great need for those who are mashkichim to have tremendous knowledge, right? And he remembers, he says, that in Europe there was tremendous supervision by a beis din of the shochtim especially. And the shochtim all were shomrei Torah and mitzvahs. But he said that apparently there's another element to shechita that I've heard about, which is nikur, right? And this includes the trimming of certain fats in veins, and it requires a tremendous amount of expertise. And I think in many cases, some of these parts actually go from the kosher schlechthouses to be sold as non-kosher. In Eretz Yisroel, I think they do more of this type of checking. But he says the degree of specialty required is no less specialized than the need that a neurosurgeon has to do delicate brain surgery. He quotes a marshal, on a freezing winter night, the people in the home were warm, snug, they had sufficiently warm quilts, and the father was also, he came home, he worked a long day, and he only got home before midnight. The phone rang, it says, and everyone was fast asleep, but the caller kept ringing, and finally the father woke up, right? And he woke up, took the phone, right, and he was, you know, somewhat still dozing, but after an instant, he was totally at ease. He said, thank you for informing me. I'll be over soon. He put down the receiver and went into his car. He wanted to start the car, but it didn't start. And the car would not start. And the need to go to where he was needed was such that he had to make effort. He had to then basically walk and catch a train in the bitter cold of winter. And because, he says, the need was great, there was a problem in his store that needed attention, he went, notwithstanding the difficulty encountered. He said, when we have spiritual challenges, we've got to basically have the same attitude. He said, the same amount of care that is given to designing one's living room, the most important room in the house, has got to go into the choice of the schools, the shuls, the organizations we let our children belong to. He quotes the pasuk from Devarim, right? I think it's Vayishon Yeshurun Vayivot. Yeshurun, the Jewish people, Yeshurun was a name used for Yaakov Avinu. They became fat and they kicked. It says, you became heavy. You covered yourself with excess fat, and in so doing, you left HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his mitzvot. Yeshurun, he says, is the term used in the Torah for Jews with intelligence. And he says what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying was, once you started to become overindulgent in the physicality of life, you became fat, you basically covered over your spiritual veins, right? Too much of a good thing is dangerous. He said, it's easy to read about our ancestors' heroic struggle to be loyal to Torah. We can read about Rabbi Akiva and how he was raked to death. And then we can go further. We can look at the Chashmonaim, who had the great Mesiras Nefesh to save the Jewish people in the Golus in Eretz Yisrael from the Syrian Greeks. And he said, we can come down in history, as we know, the tragic history of Klal Yisrael, as forecasted in B'kuchu Kosai last week. We can turn to the terrible European experience, from the pogroms down to the Holocaust, and we can look at the Shoinei Yisrael even today. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu continues in his wisdom to test Klal Yisroel. And he says the only way to withstand this experience and connection to this difficulty is to look to the Torah leaders of the time, to ask them for inspiration. He quotes an episode in David HaMelech's life. The Aron HaKodesh was finally returned to Yerushalayim. David HaMelech built a special tent, I guess like a mishkan, to put the Aron in, right? And David HaMelech, we know when he started to bring it, there was a problem in that it says the Aron is noisei es noisei hem. The Aron carries its carriers. And people should had to learn that and know that, which means that you never worry. Now, the Polishtim had returned the Oroin on a wagon, and they was left there. And there were oxen hitched to it, which was not the way to really carry it to Yerushalayim. You should have had Kohanim. The Kohanim would have touched the staves of the Oroin, and they would have been propelled into the air, and the Oroin would have carried them to Yerushalayim. But not only that, what happened was the oxen began to stumble, and it looked like the Oroin might come out of the wagon. A certain gentleman, Oved Agiti, right, moved and he touched it. And for some reason, I don't understand, he was nifter on the spot because HaKadosh Baruch Hu used this to teach the Jewish people that, again, remember, you forgot, Oroin Noiseis Noiseihem. David HaMelech, right, was not deterred. While the Oroin remained, right, in Oyved's home. The first one who was Nifter wasn't Oyved, it was another name. Anyway, it stayed there and he had mazel, and David had it brought properly to Yerushalayim. David HaMelech, when it came, was with such simcha that he danced in front of everyone. David HaMelech became the party goer's delight in the simcha for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Oroin coming into Yerushalayim. And people saw, they saw their king basically acting as, you would say, you know, the badchin at a wedding. His wife, Michal, who was Shaul's wife, castigated him and he said, this is not the way that a king demonstrates himself, conducts himself in front of even the lowest elements of Klal Yisroel. And he said to her, when I am serving the Rabboni Shel Olam, I don't care who's there. He said, and let me tell you, all those people who you think are of lesser stature, they have greater commitment to a Kaddish Boruch Hu than you can even estimate. And he said to her, for this reason, because I appreciate the godless of Klal Yisroel, that's why David Melech Yisroel Chai Chai V'Kayom, as opposed to your father Shaul. Right? He says that we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day in davening for Chachma Bina V'Das. Chachma is knowledge gained studying from one's Rebbeim, from Sforim, from our rabbis. Bina, the logic needed to take what it seems to be even theoretical, to take the moral lessons and apply them to real life situations. And Das is the insight to have an element of skepticism, to try with the utmost to look with only MS, with only truth at life situations. He says that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Dor HaMidbar. We're told they were one of the smartest generations that ever existed, notwithstanding that they didn't get into Klal Yisroel, all of them. And he quotes from the Ramban, who wrote a letter to his son where he basically gave this self-same message. Be careful You've got to continue to learn la'asois, to do the mitzvot, and to internalize the lessons. And he says, as we go through Bamidbar, there will be many, many ethical lessons to be taught based on the things that occurred.